or for the future. When I lost a longtime client to an overseas manufacturer, I became very concerned. He also noticed that people on the creative side were butting heads with people in sales, marketing, and accounting more often, and more loudly. Doug actually had to break up an argument between a designer and a salesperson that had become overheated and was verging on fisticuffs right outside his office. I realized that even though we had grown staff and revenue, I was still running the business like it was four people in my live-work loft, he says. That wasn't the case anymore. He had a small downtown office and factory. Yet there was no organization. Doug was making every decision, and no one else felt they had ownership over their job or department. I felt a lack of control, lack of time, lack of money, and I was starting to feel a lack of clients. My business felt like it was diminishing, not growing, says Doug. Doug met with his five key managers and listened to what they had to say about what was going on in their areas. He looked at the workflow for each project, and with his key team, focused on how to decentralize and empower managers to coordinate with the needs of other departments. By keeping the agenda tied to client satisfaction, there was less griping and sniping and more problem-solving. Department heads could make decisions without having to go to Doug with every single problem in question. What could have become an economic nightmare of missed deadlines and lost orders was instead turned around into a more efficient business structure. Now that he was less involved with the mundane tasks of everyday business, Doug was able to stay in touch with existing clients, develop new business, and work on strategy. Work is more enjoyable for everyone now, and teams act toward a common goal: client happiness. We now work together with ease because we share one vision and one goal, says Doug. A feeling of abundance and growth abounds in the office, and Doug has more clients than ever. The only investment this required was time. Doug had to take a step back and look at what was happening in the business. Today, Doug has 50 employees and has branched out beyond t-shirts and tote bags to custom outerwear and home decor. As long as the structure is in place, we communicate with each other regularly, and people feel they own their jobs, it will work, he says. With a few simple steps, I was able to turn around a chain of restaurants, and Doug was able to turn around a business before it started to dramatically deteriorate without a significant investment of money. Like us, you can turn your flagging business around and make it into a long-term enterprise. It starts with both vision and people. Here are five ways to make it happen on a dime. 1. Create and communicate a common vision. The mission of your business has to be specific and accessible to your stakeholders, your employees, customers, vendors, and investors. Everyone needs to be on the same page and working toward the same goals, but they can do that only if they know what those goals are. I described what I wanted to do and my vision of the restaurant's new theme to staff. I did it in such a way that they felt included, which resulted in a high level of buy-in among workers. I couldn't have done it without their participation, support, and enthusiasm. Doug did it by meeting with his key players and listening to their views on their jobs and the vision of the company. He reached out personally to customers who had been unhappy and pinpointed where the dissatisfaction came from. Key vendors were included in discussions. Only after that was he able to create a structure that addressed workflow issues. 2. Be upfront and clear. When making changes to your business, you have to inform those whom it will affect, and you have to be very honest and specific about what you're doing and why. If you don't, you risk losing the trust of those who make your business work. I enlisted the help of employees at the restaurant. Doug, throughout the process, informed his employees about how he was reorganizing and decentralizing decision-making with easy-to-understand graphic flowcharts and other visuals. He held regular meetings in the lunchroom of his offices and made sure to answer all questions about the new structure of the small company. This reduced anxiety among employees and calmed fears that there would be layoffs. If your plans necessitate layoffs or cost-cutting, be honest about it. Don't hide in your office and pretend you're not letting someone go or reducing budgets. That sucks, and people hate it. You will lose the trust of everyone around you, and they'll leave you high and dry. 3. Make note of milestones and acknowledge achievement. Even if you do everything right, change is stressful for everyone. One of the ways you can maintain enthusiasm and momentum among employees, customers, and others is to notice when things go right. Every time you move closer to achieving your business goals, make note of it and celebrate. When Doug's team made a deadline early, he would send out a congratulatory email blast along with token cash bonuses to the production team handling the project. If the sales team landed a new client, he'd take them out to a casual lunch. Moreover, he made sure to connect each win to the overall mission of the company so that the message was clear. The new structure and their shared vision were helping them succeed. 4. Create an environment. Creating a good office culture doesn't mean free lattes for everyone every morning, building an employee gym, or having an organic on-site employee dining room. Leave those ridiculous perks to the overblown tech startups that implode on a regular basis because of excess spending. A positive office culture is one in which everyone in the company is aligned on values and rowing in the same direction. This is supported by regular check-ins with staff and can be as simple and inexpensive as weekly staff breakfasts, monthly or bi-monthly training sessions focused on customer service and Employee of the Month program, and simple employee incentive programs. Jody Hyman of McGill University looked at companies with employee-friendly policies and in a study called Profit at the Bottom of the Ladder concluded that soft benefits, like simple and low-cost employee incentive programs, were directly responsible for driving increased efficiencies and productivity among employees. I have long used incentive programs such as flex time and shoutouts in the hospitality business and can attest that Hyman's findings are accurate. 5. Always keep an eye on the future. As a leader, you have to focus on the future and make sure your team understands this as well. Obviously, employees need to be attentive to the tasks and deadlines at hand, but they also need to understand that today's successes are part of tomorrow's growth. Company values, regular performance reviews, postmortems after large projects are completed, peer-to-peer reviews, and regular meetings where everyone feels comfortable to contribute all go a long way toward creating a future-oriented team. These all represent no and low-cost investments with huge payoffs for short and long-term success. Bullshit Buster, Sanjay Govil. Sanjay Govil is the founder and chairman of Infinite Computer Solutions, a tech-based business services company. Sanjay worked for IBM and Verizon before establishing Infinite in 1999 with an investment of just $1,000. The company grew with minimal outside funding and had its IPO, initial public offering, on the BSE, Bombay Stock Exchange, and the NSE, National Stock Exchange of India, in February 2010. It was one of the most successful IPOs of that year. Under Sanjay's leadership, Infinite has grown from a single employee, Sanjay and his home office, to a multinational team of more than 6,000 employees located in India, the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, China, and Singapore. When I started working in technology, it was fairly easy to find a cushy job in a large company and remain comfortable in that environment, says Sanjay. In 1999, I was working in management for a major telecom company and was doing well in my career. I felt like it was my time to do something else, so I quit my job. I had a family and two children, but I had to do it. Sanjay had an idea for technology-based business solutions in networking, mobility, and other areas, but says he didn't have a business plan. He felt that the idea would be successful because it addressed an issue many businesses could benefit from. I believe that if you pursue your dreams, good things tend to happen. For me, the plan was to take baby steps. Sanjay had no choice because he had very little money to start, no job and limited savings, not to mention a family to support. His meager $1,000 initial investment would have to be enough. The $1,000 was primarily used to buy a PC and get an internet connection. I remember getting my first email address, but not receiving any emails for a long time, he says. The small steps toward Sanjay's goal of creating an agile tech company helped to ensure that he didn't overspend or overextend himself too soon. It was important for me to focus on one client, and I made sure I did a very good job there. I wanted to build my references, expertise, and resume, and prove to myself I can grow from one client in a competitive environment. Once he built up a high standard of results and a range of clients, Sanjay felt it was time to start delegating the day-to-day work. I did not want to get sucked into the everyday issues of the organization, and I did not want to be the face of the company. If that happened, I would be stuck there forever. One mistake that entrepreneurs make is that they don't delegate to other people. As a result, they get too involved in day-to-day activities, and they are not able to use their strengths as the idea person and the visionary. That is the only way the entrepreneur can expand the company. Sanjay says it is critical as an entrepreneur to realize that you cannot be both the visionary and in charge of strategic planning. You have to choose, and he believes that being the visionary is more productive for the person who wants to grow and continue to innovate. Agility is a very critical aspect of a good entrepreneur and a great leader, because a lot of time can be spent on mundane matters that are not good for the company. So obviously, process is very important. And understanding your environment is equally important, he says. However, being able to prioritize, reprioritize, and be flexible is the only way to succeed. Having the ability to pivot and adapt to the contemporary environment is paramount. Sanjay's key advice is that regardless of how much money you make, never lose focus on why you started your business. Don't forget that you are an entrepreneur first. A person who wants to influence change to better your community, he says. If you ask Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg or Amazon chief Jeff Bezos, I would guess they would say that money is not what drives them. I don't think they even check their stock prices. They are focused on making companies better for the good of the people, which is why they are involved in social causes too. Quit mentoring people at your company. Quit setting strategic plans. Find other people to do those things better than you can do them. These are ways that entrepreneurs limit themselves. In the end, being an entrepreneur is a very simple thing. It is not about money. It is about you exploring the possibilities and finding ways to make a difference and influence change. Bullshit Buster. Jennifer Myers Ward. Jennifer was 28 years old when she started her online marketing agency in her one-bedroom apartment in Fort Lauderdale, Florida in 2003. She had to use creative strategies for growing the business and gaining new customers before there was something called social media. I started the agency, eboveandbeyond.com, with only my savings and myself, she says. Today, there are five of us on staff, and we have worked with dozens of clients in a variety of industries. In 2017, Jennifer's company won the Affiliate Summit Pinnacle Award for Agency of the Year. It's only the fifth time the award has been given, and Jennifer was its first female recipient. Starting a business wasn't a difficult decision to make for Jennifer, in part because she was young, single, and had no children. I had a dog, but other than that, I was unencumbered. I also had no idea about the risks involved. I might be more trigger-shy today, but then, taking a chance on my own business seemed reasonable. Timing, not resources, was everything for Jennifer. In 1997, she moved to London with no job, just to see what would happen, she says. She had had a job at an ad agency in Charlotte, North Carolina, where she picked up some e-commerce skills, a nascent but growing segment of advertising. However, she hated the ad business, so a change of scenery seemed like a good idea at the time. Since I had no money, I lived in youth hostels, bought a newspaper, and saw that Amazon was starting to get a foothold in the UK, and it had just acquired Book Pages Limited, a British online bookseller. She applied for the job and was hired right away, specifically because she knew a little about the internet. I actually had a personal email address. Having an email address, understanding what AOL was about, and knowing what dial-up was, got me a long way back then. I educated the higher-ups and talked to the company's clients about the internet. I had no idea what Amazon or the internet would become. I was not a prophet, but I was familiar with buying books online. I had enough understanding, more than most people in Europe, of the technology. The online world was the wild, wild west back then, and Europe had to get on board, she says. After spending 3 years at Amazon UK, things changed. Jennifer's fourth-year visa was denied because her knowledge was no longer specialized. I had to either marry a British dude or go home. So I came home, she says. Jennifer was offered a job in the Seattle office, but she didn't want to move to another rainy environment. I declined the job and moved to Florida where my dad lived. I worked for a brief time at a catalog company in Boca Raton as VP of e-commerce. At Amazon, I had worked with all sorts of products, from tube socks to jewelry, so I knew a bit about a lot of products. Jennifer stayed with the company for 2 years, but eventually she realized that even though she loved the work, she wasn't good at sitting in a glass office. At the same time, friends were asking me, "Can you look at my e-commerce website?" I saw that I was parsing out a lot of valuable information and insight for free. I thought, why can't I do this as a business? Jennifer never sat down to write a business plan. I knew there was a need in the marketplace. I understood what people were not doing right and what they were doing well. I could say, don't invest here, invest there. I had the knowledge and no money. But I did have an apartment and a computer on a card table, so I did things that didn't cost any money to get started. I was not in it for the money, but to help people. Jennifer also overcame a scarcity of financial resources with an abundance of networking skills. The thread that weaves any business is networking, and she attributes a great deal of her success and her ability to start the business with almost no cash investment to a savvy use of the contacts she made and maintained throughout her employment. Jennifer credits the networking aspect of her business for both her client base and her staff, which costs little or no money. "I keep up with people," she says. "I have a drawer full of business cards, and I make notes on the backs of them, personal notes about what the person likes, and organize them into different categories. I am also diligent about reaching out to people. When I do reach out, I can make it personal because I keep notes. In a week, I talk to at least a couple of people from my card pile." During her first year in business, Jennifer had no idea how long it would last. She noticed there was an e-tail conference in Palm Springs, California, across the country from her apartment in Fort Lauderdale. It cost $1,200 for the badge, which I didn't have, but I knew I had to be there because everyone from online retailing would be there. It was like a Grammy list for me. Jennifer didn't buy the expensive badge, but she did book a room in the hotel where the conference was being held, booked a cheap flight, and headed to Palm Springs. Once again, a scarcity of funds did not deter Jennifer. "Everyone socializes at the bar, so I planted myself there. The first day I met people in line at lunch. I made conversation with everybody and met amazing people. One of the guys I met at the bar used to be head of e-commerce at Abercrombie and then The Limited and Things Remembered. I kept in touch with him, and in 2015, I took over his company's e-commerce account from an agency that had had the business for 13 years. My point is, I met this guy standing at the bar and kept up with him. I followed up on our meeting with a handwritten note. He told me I was the only person who bothered to do that. Personal notes have an impact. They cut through the clutter." People don't realize they actually have large networks, according to Jennifer, but they should, because they are vital to doing business. You already have credibility with people you know. You don't have to cold call, and everyone you know knows someone else, she says. "I have never done marketing for myself. My business is all the result of networking, follow-up, and word of mouth, people saying we do a stellar job. Don't neglect the people you know and meet. It's the most effective and cheapest way to market your business and win customers." Bullshit Buster. Flora Pringle. When Flora Pringle moved from England to New York City with her husband and baby, she needed to find a way to make money in one of the most expensive cities in the world. She initially hoped to find a teaching job in the city, but quickly realized she wouldn't be able to find a part-time teaching job or cover the insane child care costs. Flora wanted to do something worthwhile while working from home so that she could take care of her baby. As a new mother, she became particularly interested in childhood health, especially reading about obesity and the American obsession with sugar. In the course of her research on this topic, she found out about a natural sweetener called xylitol. "Xylitol," Flora read, "is a sweetener found in fruits and veggies. Our bodies produce it. It's even good for our teeth." Flora was intrigued by xylitol and thought, what if instead of sugary candies that can cause tooth decay and affect blood sugar and insulin levels, we use this natural sweetener to make a healthy candy that is actually good for people? She decided to experiment with the ingredient herself and bought xylitol inexpensively on the internet, along with food-grade essential oils, thinking it could possibly be a product with sales potential. Flora didn't let scarce funds or a lack of experience in candy-making stop her. In fact, her naivete in starting the business actually might have helped her. She used her savings to order 10,000 inexpensive candy tins from China, even as she was still experimenting with her recipe, because she believed so strongly in her idea of healthy candy. The tins were the only material goods we invested in, and we used our savings for that. It was somewhat naive because when they arrived, we were literally living with them under the bed, under the tables, and lining the walls, since I didn't have a warehouse, she says. Once she had the candy, which she called cracked candy, figured out, she found a cheap commercial kitchen in which to manufacture it. Having no money for marketing, she went door to door selling her product. I went to my local stores with my baby in a stroller and said, "I am a local mom, and I have made a healthy candy. Will you try it?" Every store I approached took it on. I got into about 50 stores just by walking into them off the street with my baby and no appointment, she says. That's how I was able to get cracked candy into the Gowanus Brooklyn Whole Foods. I walked in and talked to the buyer. Once you are in one store and have done the necessary paperwork, you can talk to buyers in other stores because they have a lot of autonomy. The Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce trade show followed at a cost of just $300. That's where I got my first big client, OTG Management, which runs general stores and airports. They ordered hundreds of tins at a time, says Flora. She hired Brooklyn Community Services, a wonderful organization that provides work for disabled people in local communities, to pack the tins. That help allowed me to get out of the kitchen, support my community, and sell more and grow the business. When more orders came in than community services could handle, she added another packer to her production line. Flora's success has been led by her ability to see obstacles, her lack of knowledge about the business and her lack of huge funds, as opportunities, and she never lets the bad overwhelm the good. There were lots of points where I wanted to give up. It's a love-hate relationship. Some weeks you want to walk away, then something exciting happens, like Lena Dunham putting a picture of the candy on her Instagram account, she says. Those things remind me of why I started in the first place, and I'm right back to it. I hope you now understand that nothing can stop you from going after a goal, starting a business, or making a change in your life. If you get into a business for the right reasons, because you have a passion for it, or because you have an idea that will improve people's lives, you can and will succeed. If your motivation is to just make money or hang around with your friends, you're going to fail. If you are not passionate, the only thing you will achieve is mediocrity. There has to be a driving interest and enthusiasm for an idea. Without it, motivation for money or friendship will wane very quickly. Be willing to take responsibility for failure, because that is crucial to your success. Stay on top of the numbers, find the right help, stay agile, don't get bogged down by details that don't matter, and focus on things that create a great quality experience for your clients or customers. That is a formula for success. You don't need money. You need passion and commitment. DBY to-do list. Just try it. If you have a great idea for a service or a product, but no funds to create samples or prototypes, do what you can with the resources you have. If you are passionate about a business idea and serious about getting it started, lack of funds is quite likely to be a temporary condition. The adage, "do what you love and the money will follow," has been proven true many times over. It can be true for you, too. Create a plan. Everything I do, I start on paper. Every promotional idea, every market analysis, and every new creative endeavor. I look at it, digest it overnight, and reread and revise the next day. I see what's missing and what doesn't need to be there. Putting things on paper makes ideas concrete. It is worth the time and effort. I want you to create a plan of action and then systematically implement the plan. Make your idea specific, give it a name, tell people about it, and work on your business every day. Get ready to work hard and be creative. You have to get in the trenches and make your business happen, especially if you don't have huge funding to hire staff and outsource. The only way to generate revenue is to roll up your sleeves and get to work. Most of the time, this means wearing many hats. In the beginning, you have to be willing to knock on doors, work the booth at trade shows yourself, negotiate your own deals, answer the phones, make your own coffee and lunch, and sweep the floors at night. In short, you might have to be a salesperson, lawyer, marketing manager, secretary, cook, and janitor, all in the same day. You'll also have to be smart and creative about money and the things that cost money, like inventory and staff. A final word. If you had a dime for every excuse you made, I wouldn't have to be here right now. Too often I've had to say this exact thing on Bar Rescue. I hope you're not going to make me a rich man with your bevy of excuses thanks to our journey together and don't bullshit yourself. I do get it, but I don't let excuses get to me. When I don't want to travel another mile for a show, I remind myself of what a lucky guy I am. A middle-aged man with a TV show, a beautiful wife and family, and legions of fans from every age group, but especially young people. Come on, John, get on the plane. There are not many people who can claim to have all that and more. I earned it, but I'm also an exception to the rule about TV hosts. I always make it to the next gig and without complaint. Put your life in perspective and you will realize there is no room for excuses. I believe you can be better today than you were yesterday. Excuses keep us from that because they are the common denominator of every failure. The way to be better every day is to eliminate excuses, and you do that through honesty, professional integrity, and humor. Those three characteristics are evident in every story in this book. I think I've proved that excuses are bullshit, and the truth is, when we own our actions and take responsibility, we have no need for them. I want to leave you with a quick review of the most important and simple tips that can prevent you from falling back on the same old excuses that have been holding you back. Communicate with your clients, customers, and staff every day. Reach out, follow up, ask questions, and most important, listen. Be present. That means you are working and living in the now. Are you available to talk to people? Are you focused on the tasks at hand as you should be? Or are you distracted by the minor and the unimportant? Take time every day, even if it's 30 minutes, to think about your business, come up with or review ideas, and gain personal insight into how your life and business are going. The payoff for this small investment of time is huge. Educate yourself. Knowledge is power. What can you learn today? The fact is, when you are working on something important, you try to make it better every moment. That can be frustrating. I get that. So what? Surround yourself with a good team of people who care about you and do something every day that you can be proud of. Don't let the process or the ups and downs of trying frustrate you. Focus on the end result, because that's going to be pretty wonderful. Don't be derailed by one more excuse. Just fight it out, and you will win. Good luck. I would like to hear about your experiences. Tell me the excuses you overcame, how you did it, and what happened at johntaffer.com. This is R.C. Bray. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Don't Bullshit Yourself, Crush the Excuses That Are Holding You Back by John Taffer. This program was directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2018 by John Taffer, LLC. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.